Good day to you, sir. How are you, Mr. Bromley?
Hey Chris, I'm doing
Hey,
well. How are
Chris.
you doing today, sir? What's going on? How's things up in how's July in your neck of the woods? I hear most of the world is under a heat wave right now.
Yeah, funny enough, today it's actually a little bit chilly and raining outside, hence the
Wow.
sweater. So it's a nice change. It's been pretty hot up here, so the garden's getting a good soak, and the threat of giant forest fires exploding at any moment is reducing.
Folks, when I say, by the way, rest of the world is hot, I meant the northern hemisphere. Please, our southern hemisphere folks, those of you who watch water go the other direction, I know it's not warm where you're at. Please don't take that the wrong way. But with that said, it's great to see you, Chris. Glad to hear that it's raining. That's a good thing. And glad to hear that your imminent risk of forest fires is going down.
Yeah, it's pretty scary up here. There's a lot of forest, right? And it gets real close to the cities, and I mean, by American standards, they're probably towns, but yeah, so it's always on the back of your mind. But for now, we're good, and that's all any of us can hope for, right?
Awesome. Well, with
All
that
right,
said,
let's do it. Between March and May, researchers at Xenity observed three campaigns in which threat actors attempted to use exposed enterprise AI infrastructure to support offensive operations. Instead of exploiting software vulnerabilities, the attackers targeted inference endpoints exposed by self-hosted AI software such as OLLaMA and Light LLM. According to the researchers, if these endpoints are accessible from the internet, attackers only need to know their location to begin sending requests. Examples include OLLaMA's API slash generate and API slash chat endpoints on port 11434 and Light LLM's B1 slash responses endpoint on port 4000. Xenity identified three operators using this approach for different purposes. Two campaigns involved the autonomous penetrating testing framework Strix and Hexstrike AI, while the third used an OpenAI Codex agent configured with a persona designed to suppress safety refusals while assisting with web reverse engineering. Rather than compromising a system, the attackers configured AI clients to use exposed endpoints as the model backend, embedding the agent's system-prompted tool definitions directly in the request body. Researchers observed operators first sending a simple probe before delivering the full payload. The Strix campaign used a Light LLM client to submit a 140,000 character prompt instructing the agent to operate continuously, avoid revealing its identity, and aggressively target an unnamed French auction house. Xenity reported that its sensors detected and blocked the activity. In the Hexstrike AI case, an attacker connected to an exposed OLLaMA instance and uploaded the framework's offensive toolset containing more than 150 tools, although no target was specified, suggesting the attack was still in preparation. A third operator directed an OpenAI Codex agent through a Light LLM proxy while posing as a security auditor performing web reverse engineering. The article attributes these attacks in part to authentication and configuration defaults. OLLaMA ships without built-in authentication on its default port, while Light LLM authentication is optional, and attackers have been observed targeting the placeholder key SK-1234. Xenity recommends avoiding internet exposure for AI model backends, enforcing proper authentication, inspecting external request bodies, monitoring AI infrastructure traffic, and identifying requests containing full agent payloads or offensive tooling. Xenity CTO Michael Bargeri warned that attackers are actively searching for exposed AI infrastructure, and organizations should expect internet-accessible AI systems to be targeted quickly. So yeah, this kind of reminds me, if we go way, way back, it wasn't Napster. There was another one around that time that was even easier to use, and you could just download stuff from the internet, and people were installing all kinds of things without knowing what they were. And I kind of feel like we're doing that with AI tooling and models right now. People are just downloading defaults and exposing them to the internet, and these guys are just simply taking advantage of those easy targets, I would say.
What is that
Matt's
music
thinking. He's trying
sharing?
to remember.
What was that music sharing tool that you're thinking of? I
It
want to
began
say
with a
Llama
Z,
was
I
in it
think.
somewhere.
It began with a Z, I think. But yeah, you could like download games that had custom installers, and those custom installers just didn't install the games.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, man, I cannot remember what this thing. What this thing
It was like
was.
the
Was it
precursor to BitTorrent.
was it
It was like it
Kazaa?
popped. No, Kazaa, I think, wasn't that like a music player? Maybe it
I
was
thought no, I
Kazaa.
thought Kazaa was a music sharing tool, like a Napster, if you will. But man, I don't know. In any event, neither. Let's not get too far off topic here because we'll spend a while going down these roads. It wasn't Nutella, was it? You remember that one?
No, LimeWire.
GN
There we go.
LimeWire. Oh my gosh! Wow. Okay. All right.
That was
That's
the
another
one.
one. Yep.
Kazaa
LimeWire.
was on the
Wow.
list too.
Because I
But
was on
that
the
came
list.
after Napster. Yeah,
I don't know
LimeWire
if it's
was the first
Nutella or
one.
GNUtella. I'm not sure how to pronounce that correctly, but either way, that was another one that popped up too. Wow. Okay. Way off topic here. In any event, getting back to this, Chris, I'll be honest with you. I read this article. I'm not really too sure what to start with other than, well, duh. You had internet facing ports that, expose AI driven or ML driven, sorry, LLM endpoints, and they were used by an adversary. Well, duh. I mean, what this does, it takes me back to the 2010s, a whopping 10, 11, 12 years ago. I was doing some work with an awesome team, actually out of the Netherlands. We were finding, vulnerable, or I should say a default configuration out of the box databases. And Chris, this is back in the heyday of when NoSQL started to get a rise. Elastic, Mongo, CouchDB, Couchbase, all those things. And we were finding, production instances of people who had just kind of downloaded these things, put them up and, or were just letting them run. Well, by default, CouchDB has an admin portal that's open for everyone. MongoDB had admin capabilities. Of course, in the release notes, it was like, for dev only and stuff, but no one didn't listen to that. So, it was just one of those same situations where I'm not going to say it's a irresponsible use of technology, but I think it's another situation where everyone's just moving so fast to adoption that they're not reading the defaults. And, in this case right here, it's like, oh my gosh, adversaries are trying to hijack your endpoints. It's like, no, you deployed the default software out of the box with configurations and didn't clean or sanitize your configurations. Therefore, the default endpoints were left open and an adversary took advantage of them. It doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean they have the right to do that. But the flip side is like, so this was a misconfiguration. Like, I mean, I'm just being frank here. It wasn't an attack. It was a misconfiguration as far as I can tell.
Or
That's not
default
to.
configuration, which we've talked
Well,
about, is often meant to just make
yeah.
things work because they're trying to get you to buy their stuff or use their stuff, but it's
Yeah.
absolutely not secure. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a way to frame it as well. So for me, this is just a giant update to everyone. Like, hey, secure your stuff, right? If you've, double check and see what your models deploy and spin up. But Chris, this doesn't apply to just LLMs.
RTFM, I believe there's a term for this on the internet.
You said it, not me. I'm glad you said
RTFM.
that. But pay attention, check to see what's being deployed. Test your software, run it through certain checks and stuff like that. And if by God, for whatever reason, you need to have the default ports turned on and enabled, then document it and wrap monitoring and controls around it. That's all I'm going to say. This is one of those, it's not a nothing burger, but it's definitely one of those articles where it's like RTFM, you downloaded a thing, you left its default ports open, an adversary abused it because you left them open to facing the internet. This is the same bucket as someone who configures a publicly accessible S3 bucket, right?
Or at least ask the robot to make it secure after you ask the robot to
I
install
mean, I'm gonna,
it.
I'm
I've
gonna
been
take
writing a lot
a,
of code lately, and I'm actually starting to wonder what I'm good for around here because.
No, come on, let's not talk like that. There's a few things that you can do the cog cannot do.
Yeah. Like have anxiety.
There we go.
All right. Next up, CISA has published an advisory covering three vulnerabilities affecting Daktronics controllers, which are used to manage large-scale LED displays, electronic scoreboards, digital billboards, and highway signs. I feel like this is the precursor to like a late 90s hacker movie. According to the advisory, the vulnerabilities include an unauthenticated path traversal flaw that can enumerate arbitrary file system paths, an authenticated arbitrary file upload vulnerability, and the use of default administration credentials that provide full system access. CISA warned that successful exploitation could allow an attacker to obtain complete root-level control of an affected system. The vulnerabilities were discovered by Thomas Joe, an undergraduate researcher at Princeton University. Joe told Security Weekly that he identified multiple internet-exposed controllers making remote exploitation possible. He noted that preventing internet exposure is a responsibility of Daktronics customers rather than the vendor. According to Joe, the path traversal vulnerability can be used to read files from the device for reconnaissance and credential discovery, while many internet-exposed systems were still using the factory default administration credentials. Once authenticated, the file upload vulnerability could allow attackers to install attacker-controlled content or code on the device. In practical terms, Joe said an attacker could modify the content displayed on affected systems, including digital billboards and roadway signs. This could include displaying false or malicious messages or fake alerts. He added that achieving full compromise of the device is possible, although doing so is more complex than simply altering displayed content. Joe reported the vulnerabilities through CISA's Vince platform in early January 2026. He said Daktronics acknowledged the findings, worked with him and CISA to validate the technical details, and patched the firmware available by early March. The remaining disclosure period was used to coordinate customer notifications and publication of the advisory. Daktronics has released patches, advised customers to change default passwords, and stated that no active exploitations of vulnerabilities have been reported. Oh, what a nice story. Researcher finds fault, responsibly discloses it, company works with him to fix the thing, patches it, and notifies customers. We wait a little bit to make sure everybody's got some time, and then we publish the article. What a nice little ribbon is around this one.
Yeah, but I'm not going to lie, Chris. That was a really long-winded way, not on you, of the article. A really long-winded way of the article to be like, someone could take over the billboard content. And I was looking at this as like, I'm in agreement with you of like, dude, I'm going to hack that billboard. And it's kind of like, what? You know, and it's like, I'm going to hack that billboard. And it's like, how are you going to do that? And it's like, next thing you know, the billboard displays like, you know, will you marry me or something? And you're like, check it out. You know, and it's like all innocuous. These days, it would probably be something more sinister. But
red blinking skull that says you've been found.
That Guy Fawkes mask, you know, remasking people to remember or something like that. You know what I mean? But no, I found this one to be humorous in the sense of what could possibly be done with it. But then the flip side of it, exactly as you called out, wow, discovered in January, reported in January, fixed by March, disclosed in July or June. I mean, let's take a look here. We are recording this in July, but disclosed in July 1st. Just what a really, really cool, like everyone took their time and did the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of an asterisk there, which is like, by the way, there's still a lot of vulnerable instances out there. So if y'all could patch your stuff, that would be awesome, because I don't want to drive down the highway and see some sinister stuff pop up on a billboard.
Yeah. And just for folks listening too, like this researcher's getting the right kind of street cred. So later when he's going to start his career, he can point to this and show that not only did he find the thing, but he did the right thing. And you know, didn't go for the early controversial deployment of his POV or anything like that.
Chris, you know what this is? This is when you're in an interview and someone says, it says on your resume, you're a nice guy. Can you give me proof of that? And you're like, look at my disclosure pattern. And they're like, you are a nice guy. That is well done.
Welcome to the team, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Name your salary. You are welcome here, you know?
All right. Next up, researchers at Kato AI Labs have disclosed two critical vulnerabilities in the Cursor AI code editor that could allow a single prompt injection attack to escape the application's terminal sandbox and execute arbitrary commands on a developer's machine. The flaws, named Dune Slide and tracked as CVE-2026-50548 and CVE-2026-50549, are rated 9.8 under CVSS 3.x and 9.3 under CVSS 4.0. Both issues were patched in Cursor 3.0, released on April 2nd, and affected all earlier versions. According to the article, Cursor is used by more than half of the Fortune 500. Cursor introduced terminal sandboxing in the 2+ releases series to restrict the AI agent's ability to execute potentially harmful commands. The DuneSlide attack bypasses this protection through prompt injection rather than software exploitation. Hidden instructions embedded in the content read by the AI agent, such as data from a model context protocol server or web search result, can direct the agent to modify files it should not be able to access. Because the attack is triggered entirely through content processed by the agent, it requires no user interaction or approval. The first vulnerability exploits the working directory parameter of Cursor's run terminal command tool. By specifying a non-default working directory, the AI agent can add arbitrary locations to the sandbox's write permissions. An attacker can then overwrite the sandbox helper itself to modify shell startup files, allowing subsequent commands to execute outside the sandbox. The second vulnerability targets Cursor's symlink validation. If the application's safety check fails while resolving a symbolic link, Cursor falls back to trusting the apparent in-project path, allowing writes to files outside the project directory. In both cases, overwriting the sandbox helper disables the sandbox, causing later commands to execute with the user's privileges and potentially providing access to local resources and connected cloud or SaaS environments. The article notes that there's no evidence these vulnerabilities have been exploited in the wild. Cato AI Labs reported both issues to Cursor on February 19th. According to Cato, the reports were initially rejected because Cursor's threat model did not consider misuse of model context protocol servers. After Cato escalated the issue, Cursor reopened the reports, addressed both vulnerabilities in version 3, and the CVE identifiers were assigned on June 5th. The researchers described DuneSlide as the latest in a series of prompt injection vulnerabilities affecting Cursor, arguing that these issues reflect broader architectural challenges for AI coding agents that process untrusted external content rather than isolated implementation bugs. So kind of another nice story too, where, you know, they found this thing, they reported it, they said, meh, and then they escalated it, they accepted it, they patched it.
Yeah.
Nobody was harmed. This is kind of actually a boring show today, man.
No, this is not. This is good. We should be talking about this stuff more often. We should be talking about responsible disclosure. Everyone who's listening, take note. This is how you disclose stuff. This is how you disclose stuff. You go through the right processes. You don't release a POC out into the world and tell everyone it's for security purposes. Good luck. And then you take a hiatus or a day off or something like that. Chris, I think there's a few matters at hand here that we should probably address. First off, usage of AI tools inside of an environment. Those defenders out there who are listening to this, this is something you're going to need to start to get your arms around. I'm so sorry for dropping this right around July 4th weekend, but this is something that we're going to need to start to get our arms around from an enterprise perspective. There's going to be a lot of unfettered, unchecked usage of AI tooling out there. The first step has got to be insight, and it's got to be governance and visibility. That's like the first takeaway there, Chris. Then that expands into why? Because we've now got vulnerabilities. We've got this software that can run code. It's got access to underlying file systems. It's going to have vulnerabilities, as we've discussed with code before. There's going to be lots of issues, and those types of things need to be prevented. And like software, inventories and stuff like that are going to be critical to success there. And now we have an example. Like now we get to the article here, Cursor being a very, very popular, very, very reputable and very useful AI coding tool. It's really just, Visual Studio Code with some amazing wrappers on top of it, but it's a really, really solid tool, was patched in Cursor 3.0. But now we're making the assumption of, oh, everyone's going to be using modern and updated software and whatnot. And it's like, we can't always make that. So this is another realm of software management and software control and inventory control and whatnot that gets coupled with really, really fast, high-powered tools that are given a lot of access to the underlying mm-hmm. systems. And I look at it here, Chris, as like, and I don't mean to be tongue-in-cheek too much, but, a prompt injection that allows them to escape the sandbox. The assumption there is that the user is using a sandbox. And I've unfortunately seen quite a few number of situations over the past year or so where AI tools are downloaded, installed, given unfettered access to pretty much everything, select star, if you will. And we've seen articles, we've talked about situations where AI deletes code bases and things like that. And it's just kind of like, this is going to continue to be an issue, folks. It is not anything new or novel. It's just software inventory, user management, governance, and things like that. It's going to be in place. The other thing I'll add on here is we're not talking about folks misusing AI tools or providing sensitive data or something like that. We're talking about just having them. And this is getting into software supply chain and things like that, Chris. So it's the category just increases. The attack surface just increases, unfortunately, but it's something defenders need to have a hand on.
Yeah, I was actually talking about this the other day with the CEO of a company called Cobalt.io, Michael Argast, and you know, just how in the near term the problem that's really needs to be solved is like automated patching and patching at machine speed, and that's a tough problem. But I feel like there's going to be a solution, even if it means like virtualizing everybody's machine so that the patches can be tested in a virtual environment before being rolled out. But there's going to have to be something.
Yeah, no, there's got to be better control over this type of stuff. It's just it's not really a question.
Yeah. All right. So last up, and I'm super excited about this one. This actually happened yesterday, but I didn't see it show up in my model list today. And that's Anthropic has restored worldwide access to its Claude Fable 5 model after the U.S. Commerce Department lifted export controls that had been imposed on June 12th. The restrictions require Anthropic to block access to both Fable 5 and the more restricted Mythos 5 model for all foreign nationals, regardless of location, including the company's own non-citizen employees. Because Anthropic could not reliably verify every user's nationality in real time, it temporarily disabled both models for all users. Following the government's decision on June 30th, Fable 5 is once again available through Claude.ai, the Claude platform, Claude Code, and Claude Cowork. The export controls were prompted by a jailbreak discovered by Amazon researchers. According to Anthropic, the prompt allowed Fable 5 to identify several software vulnerabilities and, in one case, generate code demonstrating how a vulnerability could be exploited. Anthropic argued that this behavior was not unique to Fable 5, stating that similar requests could be performed by weaker models, including Claude Opus 4.8, OpenAI's GPT 5.5, and Kimi K2.7. Nevertheless, the U.S. government considered the findings significant enough to impose emergency restrictions while the issue was addressed. To mitigate the jailbreak, Anthropic developed a new classifier that detects the specific attack technique and blocks it more than 99% of attempts, according to the company's June 30th update. Requests identified as using that jailbreak are redirected to the less capable Claude Opus 4.8 model, with users notified of the substitution. Anthropic acknowledged that this approach increases false positives during legitimate coding and debugging tasks. Mythos 5 remains under tighter controls, while access currently limited to approximately 100 U.S. companies and federal agencies involved in protecting critical infrastructure while discussions with the government continue. The article also described broader efforts to improve AI safety governance. Anthropic has proposed a framework for evaluating jailbreak severity based on capability gain, breadth, ease of weaponization, and discoverability, and plans to immediately deploy mitigations for the most severe cases. The company has launched a HackerOne program for reporting Fable 5 jailbreaks and committed to giving the U.S. government earlier access to future frontier models for testing. The article concludes that the episode highlights the absence of a formal regulatory process for rapidly evaluating frontier AI models, noting that export controls were used as an emergency measure because no binding review mechanism exists. So, regardless of what you think about this, like some people think it was political and it wasn't really about the capabilities, but regardless of that, you know, there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. And like open source models are less than a year behind Fable right now. So even if you continually to try and gate what's coming out of the front end of this thing, you know, it's all catching up and there's going to be no way to put the, you know, put controls around this in any meaningful way without crippling, you know, the advantage that the U.S. has in this global race for AI supremacy right now. So I think it's one of those things where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah, Chris, I actually just got done reading the Scaling Curve, I think it's called, which is a book that talks about DARIO's history and, you know, the rise to the rise to, you know, where he's at now and everything like that from Claude St. John. Really, really, really interesting book to read. While admittedly, I do use a lot of Anthropic on a day-to-day basis, you know, I think as a lot of folks do these days, I don't have any affiliation other than simply mentioning that I read through it. And I find this idea of like AI governance from a frontier model perspective, not from an enterprise implementation, but from a frontier model perspective of like, hey, it's our responsibility to make sure that this stuff isn't used maliciously, and it's our responsibility to make sure that this isn't used by nation states. And they make a lot of really interesting comparisons in the book, Chris, that talk about like, well, what if you could take you know, a thousand Nobel scholar, like Nobel, someone smarter than a Nobel Prize winning scholar, and sick them on an infectious disease or something. Like, could you solve medical issues a lot faster? And then the really quick pivot is like, yeah, what if you could do that around, like, you know, nuclear proliferation or something like that, right? It very quickly becomes like power for one is power for all. Power for good is also power for bad. And yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of these types of decisions being made. And that's just from the frontier model perspective. The other thing that you mentioned is the geopolitical impact of this here. If you are a nation, and we're not going to name the two or three that do, but if you are a nation that benefits off of having a superior global position around AI development, chip exporting, manufacturing, or something like that, right? Is it in your best interest to let everyone else catch up? Because, and I think you and I have talked about this before, but like AI becomes this really odd equalizer, right? Not everyone can build, purchase, and utilize a Tomahawk missile, for example, right? But you and I can get the same Claude 5 prompt. You and I can open up Claude and get the exact same capability there. And this is one of those situations where, we are relying on folks to hopefully control and protect what ends up being a really, really huge asset to have as a nation. And without getting into countries that can use AI, countries that can't, countries that can produce, countries that can't produce and whatnot, to your point about, AI models, open source models, catching up in speed and catching up in capabilities and whatnot, how far behind are we? What is a pause or a moratorium on access actually do and stuff like that? And then Chris, the last thing I'll add in here is like one AI frontier model says, no one is allowed to use this. We're going to put a moratorium on it. It's like, that doesn't mean global development slows down as well. There's so many different angles and avenues of things that need to happen here. And the point I'm making is AI often gets discussed as a defensive weapon, but production and consumption are completely different than anything kinetic that we've ever had to deal with. So like the argument changes not only from a protecting, you know, resources or protecting superiority, but it also comes down to ease of consumption. Like, it's so easy for folks to just switch to another model that's just as powerful, or find a jailbroken model. So in any event, where I'm going with this is, I think it's going to be a continuous topic here. I would highly recommend folks read up on these things, read up on kind of, you know, and it's not just, you know, Dario, but also how the leaders of these frontier companies think about these things. The manufacturing and thing that goes behind it, the superiority of a company that is allowed to export GPUs versus a country that cannot import them. Like, there's so many different components to this that I think the average bear, Chris, is like, oh man, I lost my Fable access for a couple weeks. But it's like, that has ripple effects that we will see for years. And it's a fascinating thing to read up on.
I find it interesting too. I was reading recently something online around how opposition to data centers, you know, some of those movements are actually backed by foreign nation states who want to slow things down here in the U.S., North America. And it kind of makes sense. And when you look at actual water consumption for these things, they're way less than meat production or even golf courses. So the fact that, like, yeah, I understand people's concern about these giant megastructures going up and the impact they could have on the environment and stuff like that. But like, you know, if you put it into perspective with everything else that we do that's horrible for the world, it's pretty small and the upside is pretty huge. So I can't help but wonder if that opposition is being, you know, fueled a little bit by foreign money to try and slow things down and make it more difficult for us here in this, you know, democracy where people actually get a say in government policy.
Or bandwagon political aspirations. That's the other one. That's the other way of looking at it too, is like, oh, not in my state, or, you know, but not in my country, not in my province, like wherever you are in the world and stuff like that. And it's like, I mean, Chris, to your point of the measure of return versus, or, you know, risk versus reward, return versus implementation costs and stuff like that. If the world continues down this path of integrating AI into every single thing that we do, it's going to be really hard to justify a no, I think. I mean, yeah. I'm waiting, right? I'm waiting for, and I don't mean to quote this book, but I literally finished it last night on a plane, and so obviously it's fresh in my head. But the day that an AI frontier model, you know, cures, like solves a disease or something, like the day that happens, you know, like we have our own polio vaccine moment, if you will, yeah. where like, hey, used to be bad, yeah. now fixed, right? Like eradicated, gone, you know? And then we have a U.S. administration that supports such things. When we have those two combinations together, it's going to become really difficult for folks to fire opposition. I don't mean model opposition. I hope no one thinks that what Chris and I are talking about right now is like, oh, Anthropic's going to rule the world. It's not like that, like Claude our overlord. That's not the case here.
In general, yes.
In general, these frontier models, one of them is going to do something incredibly good for humanity. And it's going to be like, why did we do that thing? Because, you know, we need the data centers to do it. And it's like, I think those gains are actually a lot closer than anyone else thinks. But we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens.
It kind of reminds me, I'm not sure if you're aware, in the 70s, there was a huge anti-nuclear energy movement. And,
yes,
you know, rightfully so in some ways, you know, Chernobyl, like there's some major incidents worldwide that like had people scared. They didn't understand the new technology. And, you know, it wasn't as safe as it could have been, but we stopped developing that technology, which was actually the best weapon we had against climate change.
Yep.
And if you look at the amount of radiation put into the globe from burning coal, it's more than any of these catastrophes we've had with nuclear reactors. So it's hard to know how this is going to land for us. I really hope that we see the forest through the trees, because like there's so many problems globally that, in my opinion, at this point, the only way we can fix it is with some super intelligence. You know, like we need to lean into the technology, because it's the only way we're going to be able to solve the problems we have right now. There's no going back. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, no, agreed. Now, to be clear, like, and this is my last point on this, Chris and I are not advocating for like eminent domain laws and people losing their homes and stuff like that. But I think, Chris, you make a really valid point of like global industrial usage of water, which is being used as the main catalyst for anti-data center movement and stuff. To your point is like, okay, then if that's the issue, the sticking point, then let's look at other industries that are established.
Dude,
and let's
golf courses globally use the same amount of drinking water as humans.
If I'm not mistaken, I think almond farms are up there as well.
There's some lower hanging fruit. Like, poor rich guys can't go whack a ball around for the afternoon. Let's start there.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I'm with you on it. I'm trying to think here. I think it's almond farms that require a lot of water.
That's sad. I like almonds a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, right? A single almond takes
like
somewhere 100 between
gallons for every pound of beef we produce too, which is also wild. Like, if you look at like the resource consumption for growing agriculture for meat production, it's significant. Yeah,
as well as CO2 emissions and whatnot as well.
Cowboys.
A serious ozone weakener, but. Yes. Nonetheless, awesome.
I think I just heard my 6-year-old boy laugh from the other room.
How far it is.
Yeah, all right. On that note, sir.
That's the day for us.
Great. Yeah. It was great chatting with you, Matt. We'll do it again next week.
Likewise, Chris. Take care.
All right.